for Sway, Bunny Kitty, Wet Paint on Rebel Radio. Peep game. Go fuck yourself, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
Would you say Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I bring you the rebels who are shaping our culture. I'm your host, Josh Levine, and I have a great interview to share with you today. My man, Persuay from San Diego. He's a graffiti artist, holding it down there for a long time. We've worked together a little bit over the years, and I'm a big fan of this dude and everything he's doing. So in addition to, you know, his own work under the name Persuay, murals, all that stuff, he's also created a character called Bunny Kitty, which is kind of an anime style character that he's built into a brand with clothing, with a book, some other fun stuff coming out that he's going to talk about. And it's amazing what he's done with that brand. And if that's not enough, he's also created another brand called Wet Paint, which is a project of collaborations that he does with other artists. And he's just got some great insights into the idea of brand building in this space and how he's creating and managing all this at once. He started his career as a designer at DC Shoes, you know, one of the first skate companies out there, and shares some great lessons about that. And it's good stuff coming up with Persuay.
I was hanging out with, you know, my crew in high school, and this guy was Filipino. And so, you know, it was only a matter of time until we met him, and he had the black book, and I asked him what it was. And he opened up the book and he was like, well, this is my Bible. And it was full of, like, every single page was airbrushed and design markered, like beautiful burners, you know, like really futuristic styles. And I'd never really seen it right in front of me before, you know, like in person. And I think that just with the timing, what was happening in music, and I was getting into skateboarding, and when I saw that, it just clicked, and I was like, I want to do that. And that night, after knowing him only for a few hours, we went out that night with a van full of friends and wreaked havoc all over the freeways and
nice
suburbs of San Diego.
What was that feeling that first night?
Loved it. Yeah. But I was frustration too, because I was such a toy that I couldn't get the paint to do what I wanted it to do, what my mind was thinking.
Yeah.
I couldn't make the paint do it.
Sure.
So
yeah, I mean that takes that's the work, right?
Yeah, and I think naturally, like, I'm a little competitive with myself, and so it was like, well, I'm going to get better at this.
Yeah.
And so I completely, like, just head first into it.
Yeah. I've heard people, I think, you know, we had Saber on the show. I think he talked about, you know, from that first time, like, feeling kind of an addiction.
Yeah, I think that's, I could relate to that. And it was just, from that day on, it was like, I was doing okay at school, but after that I was drawing on the desk. Yeah. I was drawing all over my homework, but I've always drawn on my homework. I stopped doing homework. I started playing hooky from school to go jump in my friend's car to go look for graffiti around San Diego in the pits. Mm-hmm. And look for other writers and stuff. Like, school was like out the window for me at that point. So it completely took over, so I could agree to that addiction kind of feeling.
Yeah, I get it.
Saber on another level. I mean, that guy, I mean, what an amazing career.
Oh,
and
yeah, for sure.
An amount of body of work that he's done illegally and legally. Just real dope individual.
Yeah. So, but you weren't thinking of it as a, you're not seeing it as a career at that point.
Oh, not at all. I was going to join the Navy because I wanted to get out of San Diego and I wanted to see the world. And it just so happened, I was doing some pieces. I'd already been taken on, like, as an apprentice for a graffiti writer, a king down here in San Diego. He goes by the name of Quasar. Mm. He was already really established, and he saw the potential in me and kind of pulled me under his wing and got me away from a lot of the like bullshit like that was happening, like with tag banging and all that stuff. And he made me real focused on you know, stylized, you know, like getting better at style and techniques, and went out and painting and traveling and connecting with other like-minded individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, like really opened the door for me to that, like the insight. So what's the second part of the question?
Well, I was just wondering, at what point does it go from
making money?
Yeah, making money, or feeling like this is what I'm going to do for my life.
I think it was, well, for me, it was when I met Ken Block on a phone call. I was painting a skate shop. I wasn't getting paid. I think they were giving me like clothing or a deck or something. I got a full deck for painting the skate shop. Uh-huh. And, Ken Block, this guy, the owner, was buying 8-Ball at the time and was like, hey, you know, there's this t-shirt company called 8-Ball, and you know, maybe they'd be into working with you. And I called him, and he was like, well, if you draw something up on and you know, send it to us, and if it's good, we'll put it on a t-shirt. Yeah. And I love that idea. I love like having something like, oh, it's just another area that I haven't touched. At the time, and I was young, I was 18 or 19, and I gave him that design on a Subway napkin because I was making Subway sandwiches at the time. And the t-shirt went did really well, and so that led to him buying all sorts of art out of my black book, and it was a really nice check for the time. Sure. And I was like, oh, wait a second, like I think I got something here. And I called the recruiter up who was recruiting me for the Navy. I had like one signature left to get into, you know, just like my placement, you know.
Yeah.
And I called him and I told him, hey, I'm not coming to the Navy. I've got another calling. And he was like getting real pissed off and hostile at me on the phone. I was like, I gotta go. And that was it.
Wow.
And so I found myself working in the warehouse at 8-Ball. And then we had just started to launch Drawers. Mm-hmm. And then we launched Dub, and then we launched DC. So I was the founding artist for all those brands while moonlighting as a graffiti writer, which was amazing because skateboarding, you know, they have these quotes like graffiti saved my life and skateboarding saved my life. And I think both of those kind of like industries really had a lot to do with shaping me to who I am today.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
I had spent decades in the industry building brands.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the man behind the man in so many ways, you know?
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about Fiverr. You know, for 2020, there's no such thing as business as usual. Every company I know, every company you know, is figuring out new ways of getting things done. We're working remote. Some companies are downsizing. All the events are moving to virtual. Even this show, we used to record every episode face-to-face. Now we're doing video chat, phone chat, etc., etc. If you own a business, pivoting quickly is hard enough, but finding the right people that you can trust to make it happen, that's the key to success. Fiverr is a great freelancing platform that helps you find talent to build your online presence fast. Whether it's building your first website, designing social graphics, you got to have the right people, and getting the wrong people is disruptive to your business. So Fiverr lets you hire freelancers who have proven track records and clear pricing. You're not in the dark. You're not haggling. It just makes everything easier. Use Fiverr to connect with freelancers offering hundreds of digital services from graphic design, copywriting, web programming, film editing, pretty much anything you need done that can be done remote, which is, as we've learned, is everything you can do on Fiverr. You can work with confidence, knowing exactly what you're paying for upfront. The payments are released to freelancers once you've approved the work. They have 24/7 customer service, so anytime you have an issue, Fiverr is there to help you. Find talent today at Fiverr.com and get 10% off your first order using our code REBELRADIO. All the digital services you need are in one place at Fiverr.com, code REBELRADIO. Again, that's Fiverr.com, code REBELRADIO.
Tell me about that, you know, working with Ken and Damon. You know, obviously now we know the history of DC and how you know, the massive influence they've had on culture.
Yeah, big time.
What was it like working with those guys? What'd you learn from them?
Oh, a lot, man. I learned a lot about marketing, a lot about production design and development, being finished, having an idea and seeing it all the way through, right? Yeah. So this opened up the, you know, that educated me like hands-on, real-time on how to, you know, be a part of a company. And the first time I worked with them a couple times, almost three times. Mm. The first time, like I said, was like around 92. And I worked with them for a couple of years before they let me go, because they only let me go because I didn't know how to use the computer. And the computer, the personal computer and the graphic design was so new.
Crazy.
And they needed someone, like Ken needed somebody to like help him with the workload because it was getting busier and he had all these brands, right? Yeah. And he was really the graphics guy. He was really in charge of, you know, the visual and the overall aesthetic of those brands. Where Damon was doing a lot of the clothing design and development mm-hmm. for them. So they let me go and I went to go work with Tony Magnuson at Evil and Nico at Evil and learned the computer. And then a couple of years later, Ken called me up. I think it might have only been a year later, called me up when he had hired Aliasha from Fat Farm and mm-hmm. Mecca. Mm-hmm. And they were like, hey, you know, we'd like to have you come back up and interview. We really like you as a person and your, you know, what you've brought to the table in the past. And the company's different from what it was when we first started. So why don't you come up and interview with Ollie? And so I did. So I met with Ollie and Ollie looked at my work and he was like, you're hired. And that was it. So I came back to DC and worked with Ollie again from like 95, 96 until 98, perhaps. I think Ollie had left there to go do Alpha Numeric and I stuck around for a little while longer. Then I left there to go start Circa. Mm-hmm. So, but I learned a lot from Ken and Damon. That they were great managers and bosses to work under. They had a really strong vision for their brands, yeah. really focused. And I think that we see that still today echoing within the ethos of DC, even though they're not hands-on involved anymore.
Yeah.
You see everybody kind of looking back at the era of when we were doing it and the influence we had on the market at the time. And what made it so cool mm-hmm. was that we were these kids that designed all this stuff and made all this really cool product without anyone telling us what to do. We just did it, you know?
Sure. Yeah, that's so huge.
I think that helped with the success.
I mean, first of all, how funny to, you know, just the thought of like not knowing how to use computers now is like so crazy, right?
Yeah, and I was a little embarrassed. I was pretty sad with the day I came to work at DC and the warehouse manager had a check for me and I just remember being just an emotional wreck.
Of course.
And but I had a job in the next 4 hours when, you know, the company is, you know, when Tony Magnuson heard I didn't have a job, he was like, he just swooped me up.
Yeah.
So I was really fortunate in that light. There wasn't a lot of graffiti writers at the time or people that had what I was doing. It was like a handful of us, right? So like it wasn't really saturated. There weren't like a lot of people on computers
yeah, of and course.
All this stuff, but it became an industry standard in a sense, you know, that to hire a graffiti writer to, you know, make your brand look really cool.
Totally. Yeah. What do you, you know, graffiti and skateboarding both are like, you know,
like this.
Well, yeah, and you know, I think what they have in common is, you know, these underground movements that now are just global, you know,
right.
sort of mainstream. What do you think, what's that done for the culture? What do you think is the is there a downside? Is it
of creating an industry?
Well, just of kind of where it is today.
I think, I think it's like for a graffiti writer, I think we look at it as like, well, who's paid their dues, right? who's actually put in the work. And with technology, it blurs the lines, right? Mm-hmm. So it's hard for us to trust the movement in a sense unless you're being vouched for. Right. As far as the industry, us creating an industry, I thought it was exciting times because I think that my generation helped spearhead that as well.
Absolutely.
I don't know, you know, if it really helped anybody. I don't know if it was really like a royalty program put into place, kind of like how skateboarding was, you know, like the skateboarders really kind of take care of each other. Right. I don't know if there's a brand out there that's actually putting royalty checks or money into these writers' hands. I don't know because I'm not sponsored on that level.
Sure.
But
the
free paint is always a gift and a blessing as well. Mm-hmm. Except that when you have to move studios or your collection, it's a curse.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
But it's all the things that we, you know, growing up. Oh, wouldn't it be great to have a video game, a graffiti video game?
Yeah.
And then Mark Echo makes one. And then I found myself, I bought it and I played it. And I was like, wait a second, I do this shit in real life. Like, why the fuck am I playing a video game?
Right. That's hilarious.
But it was a rap video game. It was cool. But, you know, I would rather just really go out there and paint myself.
Yeah.
Instead of virtually. I think also what the internet has done is blurred the lines of cultural, like, kind of aesthetic and styles, whereas like Philly has done a really good job at creating a bubble around their aesthetic, mm-hmm. right, with their Wicked's and their tags mm-hmm. and stuff like that, mm-hmm. whereas like graffiti letters and styles, you know, you have people in Asia that paint like people in LA and vice versa and all that stuff, and which is part of the evolution of it. But I think that we eventually see individuals that rise above all of that, that have a unique style and bring something new to the table. And so, you know, I kind of straddle the fence of like whether, you know, what we've done is good and bad, but you know, it's just part of the evolution, so you just kind of ride that wave, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, personally, I think it's amazing. I think that, you know, to see art come, you know, literally from the Bronx and East LA into, every corner of the world, to see the diversity, not just of artists, but of art, you know, that you have people like Shepherd who take the game in a whole different direction.
Right.
You know, with some good and bad attached to it, but nonetheless, right, that it creates opportunity, it inspires, you know, next generation, you know, which I think art
cultures, really brings cultures together.
100%,
you know,
100%.
I've traveled the world since the 90s and broke bread in farms of Vietnam and you know, under bridges of in Korea and daytime illegals and stopping traffic in China, you know, with riders and all that stuff, and, you know, and then just it creates a rad network, you know, of friends around the world globally, and then we have each other to turn to
for sure
most of the time, you know. So 100%, man.
Yeah,
it's been awesome.
Yeah. So one of your projects is Bunny Kitty. How did that, which I think is, you know, I mean, I love the character and the storylines.
Thank you.
How does, but it's so unique in your body of work.
It is far away, far removed from all the skate and hardcore work that I put in through the years, because it has a very kind of like soft look to it.
Totally. Yeah.
And very, you know, cute.
Right.
So 20 years ago when I developed the character, it didn't look cute at all. Mm. Actually, I want to say I have a drawing of it right here.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, somewhere. I just got to find it. It's somewhere in here. It's the first drawing of Bunny Kitty. Here it is.
Oh, wow. That's so different.
Isn't that different?
Yeah.
This is 2001. That's a picture of me the first time I painted it.
Wow, that's awesome.
And at that point, I didn't think like, oh, well, I want to turn it into something. And I, through the years, I want to say I'd already been in the skate industry for over 15 years. And it had so many brands that I had touched that had been successful and done really well. And I had a lot of people asking me like, well, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Like, when are we going to see a Persuay brand or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And I think it was just, I had drawn this picture and then I was like, oh, I'm going to draw it again. And it got a little bit more cute as I went on with it. And I was like, well, what if I created a story around this? And what if I created product to accompany that story? And I could create something, because I grew up in a time when everybody was talking about how negative graffiti was and how we were all the, you know, gangsters and tag banging and all that stuff. And okay, yeah, we ride parallel and there's a part of that that is true. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there's a lot of positive things that we do as artists and as graffiti writers as well, that I think that the media at the time really didn't understand.
Absolutely.
So my retaliation to them was Bunny Kitty, in this mindset that I was going to create something so positive and it would come out of graffiti, where in the end, like, I could be like this whole, like, you know, nana 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 type thing, you know, to go against everybody that said that graffiti was negative. And really, like, what Bunny Kitty has done is touched so many people's lives, you know, of all ages, and it's been kind of like a really cool thing to be a part of and to be, you know. So Bunny Kitty's led to a lot of exciting things, a lot of things that I never really saw happening.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, traveling and doing street art events, I had a show in Shanghai that was a mix between two different IPs that I have. One is Wet Paint and one is Bunny Kitty. And so, like, I was able to build out this entire building into a Wet Paint Bunny Kitty experience with inflatables and a New York subway station and,
oh, that's cool,
and stuff. Yeah, it was over the top. It was crazy. And so I never really saw that coming, even though, like, it was something that I've always wanted to do, but it happened. So it's been in the works for a long time. I'd written a book, The Origins of Bunny Kitty. Mm-hmm. For the people that aren't familiar, I never thought that I would be an author in my life. It's like the last thing I thought. The Origins of Bunny Kitty, I wrote with my late mom. She helped me edit the story and she wrote the magic spell. And then I hand painted all the pictures inside.
Cool. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, this is the first adventure book of Bunny Kitty, and since quarantine, I've sat down and I finished the first draft of the second book, where it gets a little bit more raw in its aesthetic, and I introduce villains and different parts of a story that aren't in the first one. So, but to go back, when I first started Bunny Kitty painting it in the streets, I mean, I was painting it next to Revoke pieces and Rhyme pieces and my pieces and Wayne and all these people got behind me, but there was a group of people that were like, oh, Persuay's bitch made, you know, he's putting flowers next to his graffiti. But like, I didn't invent that. I really saw that from the Smurfs. And there was a crew out in a writer or a crew out in Denmark, Toys, and I always saw him put flowers around his pieces. I thought it was real dope, you know. And there's nothing soft about flowers. We need flowers in order to live on this planet, man. Yeah. So, like, you know, I don't know what people are saying. So that was many years ago, and you know, time's gone on, and I've proven to myself, I guess, that there is a space for Bunny Kitty in the world.
You know, it's change is hard, right? For artists, you know, people expect to see you do the same thing that they've seen from you before.
Yeah.
But it's interesting you say that, you know, you kind of had to see that for yourself.
I did. I did. And it was difficult because I questioned myself already as a creative. Mm-hmm. And so when you hear certain things about something you love from people that you want to respect,
yeah,
it's kind of a tough pill to swallow.
So does that ever end, the questioning yourself?
No. I feel that I've gotten more refined as an artist my aesthetic and my approach.
Yeah.
But, I mean, fortunately, my fiance is there to be like, hey, babe, no, this is really strong work. You're badass, yeah. You know, or I would maybe add something more to it. Never really harshly critiquing me, mm-hmm. but like subtly, like giving me insights. And there's only a handful of people that I open up like that to.
Yeah, of course.
Probably count them on one hand.
I imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when Buddy Kenny kind of starts taking off, like, how does that change things for you as far as, because it's one character, right? And then you do other, you know, you have other work, other projects outside of that.
Bunny Kitty is a cast of characters. So there's 28 characters in the,
oh, wow.
in the Bunny Kitty universe.
Amazing.
In the first book alone, I probably tell the story of six or seven of those characters. And in the next book, I add another six or seven.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's all these characters in between that I'm trying to fit into the stories as I go.
Oh, cool.
So it's a vast universe. As far as like developing characters, like if you wanted me, hey, Dave, could you take these glasses and make a character out of them? I could do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I do that still, you know, like outside of Bunny Kitty, I'll create different characters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, with Wet Paint, it's been a nice escape from Bunny Kitty, even though like she acts as the mascot for that that movement.
So yeah, talk about Wet Paint a little bit, how that came together.
So Wet Paint is the painting of graffiti on these MTA signs that I found while taking the train to my studio in Red Hook, mm-hmm. in New York. So I was living in New York, and there's these signs that the MTA makes, and it was part of their campaign during the fight against graffiti, and it still is since sure. the 80s. And people have taken these and made artwork out of them, but not in the same vein that I had.
Yeah.
And or maybe they have. I want to say, actually, I showed a piece at the museum. We had a Wet Paint show at the beginning of this year. And there was a piece that Dr. Dax gave me to show of Stay High.
Mm-hmm.
And that was dated 04, I think. And so, like, he was the type of dude that was just kind of grabbing. He would grab things and write his name on it, and he was hustling. And
yeah.
I mean, I bought quite a few little canvases on from him back in the day. You know, like, he would show up at a wall and have a stack full of Stay High canvases, and everybody would crowd around him and, you know, 20 bucks a pop.
Oh, that's cool.
You know? So I was real fortunate to meet him and get that, and also show a Stay High Wet Paint sign in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But we turned this into kind of an ongoing traveling show that I curate with my buddy Wayne, COD, in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
And we invite our peers, our graffiti friends, our street art friends, our designers to have a crack at this. And then we have art shows and do product design and drops like clothing and hats and stuff like that, very limited amounts. And we've done, I want to say, six shows. So we've done New York twice. We've done Tokyo. We've done China, Shanghai,
mm-hmm.
Philly, of course, and Miami. And we were in talks to do a few more shows, but everything's kind of on freeze, obviously, at the moment.
Yeah,
so I'm just kind of curating a future show without any real kind of, like, solid plans.
Sure. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's been a great ride. It's funny that this whole Wet Paint thing's kind of exploded the way it has. And it's just, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, when you get an idea and you have this intense idea, and then you know, like, okay, what steps can I take to get this out there to people? And for Wet Paint, it was just a matter of inviting those people that I've been either like grown up with or wanted to collaborate with through the years and reach out to them. I found that a lot of them were really supportive and into backing us when it came to the shows and stuff like that. So it's been a great success.
I mean, I love that idea. It's so, like, it's so simple, and yet, you know, it really, like, you know, to me, one of the things that's so interesting about graffiti is how much collaboration there is.
Yeah.
And, you know, oftentimes that's these huge murals that are really involved, and, like, and you're presenting a platform that's you know, so easy to get artists involved and continue growing. I think it's brilliant.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's funny. It was like it took a lot of struggle to get to that point to find something like that, you know.
Is that right?
Because I was born and raised in San Diego. I live here now again, but I had moved to New York to try to get the Bunny Kitty book off the ground. See, I had the writing of the script of the first book sitting in my computer for 11 years, and it wasn't until my mother came down with Alzheimer's that I lost my job in the industry, and I was living off unemployment, where I was like, if I'm going to do this, I've got to do it now.
Sure.
And then I had an invite from some friends out in New York to try to make the move easier, and why don't you come to New York? It's the place where creatives thrives and fine art thrives and stuff like that. And so I put everything into storage and had very little to little money to my name, and I went out there and I took a chance.
Yeah.
And made the sacrifices of leaving my 7-year-old daughter at home to prove to her that sometimes in life that you have to take these make these sacrifices in order to get your dream into a reality.
Absolutely.
Without any promises sometimes, you know, it was really stressful. I attribute most of the gray in my beard to the experience in New York and real winters.
Yeah. No kidding.
Being a San Diego kid, it's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, for sure.
But in the end, you know, Bunny Kitty rose out of that, and it was initially very well received, but it took me still a lot of work to travel and do comic cons or design cons and book signings and workshops and elementary school readings and library readings, all sorts of stuff, in order to share Bunny Kitty to a handful of people at a time, right?
Wow.
And I think it was my mother's passing that helped gas and fuel that, and knowing that I needed this as a way to heal from that.
Yeah.
And also, you know, in order to prove to my family that I wasn't just twiddling my thumbs.
What?
And myself.
I mean, those are such big life lessons.
Yeah.
So how do you carry those? How do you use those lessons now as you go forward?
It's nicer to know that I have things that are a little bit more rooted, and people are behind. You know,
sure.
Like I really have like really loving Bunny Kitty fans, and I have people that really love Wet Paint, or both, and vice versa, or one or the other, whatever. And I just apply what I've learned through the years of in the industry, and what I've learned in the streets, and I just apply that, you know. And I try not to overwhelm people with asking them to purchase things all the time. I only make certain items at certain times within my means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I'm my own. It's like a two-person, you know, company, you know, like I'm me at the helm, and then my fiance helps, and of course Wayne helps with curation and insight to stuff.
Right.
But in the end, it all falls on my shoulders. And so, like, you know, I just kind of, you know, take it real serious. But at the same time, I I try not to make it seem like, you know, I'm here just for your money. I'm also here for your entertainment, sure, and for a distraction from all the shit that happens in our lives, right?
I mean, to me, that's that, you know, that's that DIY ethos, the way that Dub and Drawers got started, right? Like,
yes, and I think that's why I relate so well to the to skateboarding cultures, you know, yeah, and also even gang culture in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
those three, graffiti, gangs, and skateboarding, kind of ride those parallels, you know, all together.
Absolutely.
Especially here on the West Coast. So, yeah. I mean, for people maybe out east, they never really got the whole tag banging thing. Like, that didn't exist out there, you know? Like, people got jumped for their paint,
right,
and stuff like that, and beat up. But, I mean, you got fools being murdered on their doorsteps.
Yeah.
Down here in San Diego and for sure, different places, which is a damn shame, absolutely, you know?
If you're enjoying this one, let's go back in the Rebel Radio archives. Another great legendary graffiti artist who was also one of the early pioneers in streetwear, OG Risk, is a great interview talking about how he built the Third Rail clothing line as well as his own brand and an amazing career that is now several decades on. Go back and check that one out.
Where are you looking for inspiration, kind of, you know, on the new stuff that you're doing?
I think, with my stuff, it's like life imitating art. Mm-hmm. So it's basically the life I've lived with my family, my friends, my experience of traveling, how extensively, the lessons I've learned along the way, my vivid imagination and being caught in daydreams. I think daydreaming and dreams have a lot to do with it.
Sure.
I do, you know, once in a while I'll do psychedelics just for my mental state.
Nice.
For meditation reasons, not for reasons of being high, but for, you know, asking the universe for help.
And so how does that, can you see that in the art afterwards?
Yeah, there's a aspect of Bunny Kitty where it's a dream state. And so in this aesthetic, you see a lot of floating elements, mm-hmm, and mushrooms and magic. Mm-hmm. So when you see that, like, you see that, like, there's the dream state of Bunny Kitty, and she's like a little bit more of a time traveler in that sense. So, like, in this spread right here, you see Daisy the cat without the suit dreaming, but the dream is like a future kind of like characters, yeah, and happenings and bullies in the next book. So, like, these characters that are in this painting, like this one,
oh, wow,
you know, a few of them aren't in this book. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't read about this character Rilla in this book, you know, like you read it in the next book, but this gives you a little insight of what's to come.
Yeah,
so there's, like, you know, the whole mushroom play and stuff like that.
Sure.
For this particular book, I microdosed during the entire painting of the pictures. Not saying that the pictures are super psychedelic, but maybe, right, it kind of helped me get what I wanted to convey through the pictures and the layout of the book.
Yeah.
Because I was so afraid of doing the book, like I said, it took 11 years to get around to it, so I didn't even know what approach to take until the shit hit the fan and I had to do something, and so I committed, and that's the commitment there, is that book.
So how does, you know, not just the success of that project, but the risk that you took, like, how does that impact the other things you do in art and work?
I think that it helped that it really worked and that it was well received. And then also that wet paint was well received as well on the coattails of Bunny Kitty. I don't think if if Bunny Kitty worked, I would be sitting here talking to you about it. I don't know what would have happened to me.
Sure.
I think I would be painting still, but now I found myself in a situation where, like, I still need to elaborate on these stories. Mm-hmm. So I like that. I don't know what how long Bunny Kitty will go on for. It's already been 20 years.
Yeah.
I may, you know, I'm always telling my one of my daughters is that, hey, you know, I could leave Bunny Kitty to you. You could run it as a business. It does make money, and maybe you could take it further than I've taken it.
Amazing.
You know, and
that's a cool idea. I don't know that we see a lot of family art businesses.
I think of it, I see you know, Mark Baudet and Von Baudet, you know, that relationship between Mark and his father.
Mm-hmm.
And his father teaching him how to draw Cheech and the lizard while Mark was still an infant sitting on his father's lap.
Oh, wow.
Telling him stories. And so, I mean, this is from Mark's word, you know, this is what he told me, is that his father taught him how to do it, you know? And
that's so cool.
Mark grew up to be an artist and worked for Teenage Mutant Turtles and did all this stuff, but at the same time kept his father's IP intact and kept it alive. And I think that's a beautiful thing, you know, if you could do that. I don't frown on that. I've heard people say otherwise, and I was kind of appalled by them even having the idea of, like, well, it's in the DNA, right? Like, yeah, we're made up of all this ancestral DNA through the it was just handed off to Mark and he had the ability to do it and to do it really well. So, like, I think that's a commendable thing, and I think he's done, I think it's a great look.
Yeah.
You know, because what comes after Mark, you know, it's gone.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And because his daughters don't want to do it, or his, you know, there's no one that's going to pick up the pencil after him. And I think we see it also with family trusts or, you know, estates. Mm-hmm. Right? So, like, if I leave Bunny Kitty and it's all the paintings and all the drawings and the books and all the product or everything to my family, and 20 years from now a museum or somebody discovers Bunny Kitty and maybe they see the importance of it.
Yeah.
That we want to show that, and so they'll contact my estate. So, like, I'm hoping to leave things like that for my family, but I'm trying to teach my daughter, like, well, if you apply yourself and learn about sales and marketing and all that stuff, you could be not only, because she wants to be an artist.
Oh, cool.
You know, paints and stuff like that. Well, yeah, please learn about business if you do that, right?
Yeah.
Like, know a little bit about business.
what are the pieces that you that, you know, you're trying to show her, or that, like, you wish you'd known at the beginning? In terms of the business side.
Learning how to protect yourself with contracts when people want to get in bed with you, you know?
Yeah.
What you're bringing to the table and what that means on a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
For the future, how many years that, you know, what kind of scale that looks like, and
yeah,
what's the takeaway from it. I think it's also, like, how to protect yourself, copyrights and trademarks, and understanding, like, how that works.
Yeah.
And taking the, if you take your work very serious, like I do with Bunny Kitty and Wet Paint, the first thing I did was trademark it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Before I had anything. Just to kind of, like, use that as motivation of, like, well, I spent the money, I might as well try to see this thing through.
Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, so, I think it's so interesting. I was talking to someone on another interview recently on the music side about how, you know, so many artists don't fully understand the business side, so they kind of shy away from it.
Yeah.
And that's, like, the opposite of what you want to do, is, like, I don't fully understand this, so you want to, like, really kind of over protect yourself, right?
Sure. You kind of need to get in the face of it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a deterrent for companies, and I've seen it happen. It's happened to me, where, like, they won't, you know, want to work with you in the future. Or
is that right?
I mean, it's happened to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, I definitely
don't know
think,
why, but
I've seen some of that. I've seen some, you know, again, just like the artists. I mean, this is good because it means people like me have careers, right? Because there's artists that can make the art, but they don't understand the business side. There's people on the business side that don't understand what it means to be creative and to bring something into the world that didn't exist before. And
right.
So, you know, guys like me get to kind of translate and bridge that gap, and that's cool. But obviously artists need to know, I think on both sides, you know, both sides benefit from a better understanding of what your partner is going through and what's important to them.
Absolutely. And that way you guys can truly be in a sound business together.
Yeah.
Right? When everybody's on the same page, it makes you feel like you can sleep at night.
Yeah, I mean, presumably you want, you know, you're going into business with a creative person. You want them to win.
Sure.
Right? Like,
you know?
Otherwise, just buy a finished piece of art and don't ever talk to the artist.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So what are you most excited about next in terms of art or anything else?
Oh, geez. Next. I think getting the next Bunny Kitty book illustrated and the campaign together for that and releasing it to the public.
Yeah.
And announcing that I'm ready to drop the next book. That's not for, I mean, it probably won't be for 6 months or so before I start doing that.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lot of things on the table with Wet Paint, but that are all now frozen. But I think what I'll do is put together a small curated show for an online art show.
Cool.
But that has yet to be kind of figured out and done. So
sure.
I don't know, man. I think, I think it's for me, it's mostly revolving around the Bunny Kitty book, and then, you know, creating some new paintings in the studio. So
nice.
Just take time to do that.
Yeah. Are there young artists that you kind of have your eye on?
Oh, geez. I think that I'm really into female artists, you know, and what they're doing. I really love Keratos, you know, like I love her work. Lauren Yiss, of course, Amanda Lynn, Gloria Muriel, Carly Ely from San Diego, Musa, you know, from, I think she's from Spain, mm-hmm. Matt C.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of powerful female artists.
No, I mean, that's so great to see. Obviously, art and graffiti, you know, specifically has been so male dominated for so long. It's great to see all that happening now.
Absolutely. The female powerhouse, you know, like it's really cool to kind of see that rise to the through all the bullshit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, I got to do a little lightning round before I let you get back to work.
Oh, God.
Okay. That's all right. We cut out the pauses, so take your time. What's your favorite city to travel to?
Ooh, Vietnam.
Oh, nice. Never been. But
amazing.
I've heard it's amazing.
Amazing food.
Yeah.
People are got huge hearts, man.
Nice. Who's your favorite DJ?
Ooh, DJ Q-Bert.
Yeah, Q-Bert's incredible. The way that dude changed the game is unreal.
Yeah, he's from another fucking time zone. Or not even time zone, just mentally. Just like, just another... Just somewhere in your mind that people don't really tend to turn on.
Absolutely.
You know, like the ability to see... to see colors and music and stuff like that.
Totally.
It's no different from what, you know, he's doing with records,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, that's absolutely right.
His instruments, yeah.
What's the last great book you read?
Oh, it was a Holocaust survivor. I usually work on drawings and stuff while my fiance reads, so I technically don't read them myself.
Okay.
It was... oh shit, man. I forget. It was just the story of David Ferber was the survivor, and it was just a story about this young boy that survived this, losing his family and Holocaust and 7 years of this war in Poland, and like how he just kind of barely made it through, and it was a promise to his mom that he would survive, and he did.
Yeah,
and he, you know, right. So crazy. That was the latest.
And so she reads while you're painting.
Yes.
Ah, that's good.
She's that sweet.
That's amazing, dude. What a great partnership.
It took me 40-something years to find it.
Unbelievable. I love that.
Yeah, man.
If you could wake up tomorrow having gained any quality or ability, what would it be?
Oh, wow. The ability to fly.
Mm. Hell yeah.
I'd fly right on out of here. See ya.
Love it. And last thing, if I worked for you, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
Bunny kitty, bunny kitty, bunny kitty. It's probably what you'd hear from me the most. You go, this guy and bunny kitty, oh my God.
I love it, man. That's what it takes.
That's what it takes. You know, like, hey, you know, look at the guys that created, like, Snoopy and, like, I'm not saying that, like, I'm Schultz or Disney, but I created a character I believe in, you know, and that other people believe in. So that's enough to fuel me to continue doing it. So it's just a part of me and my DNA. So, you know, I see the positive effects it has on people, so it makes me feel good and it keeps me going. So.
Absolutely. Wow, I love
kitty
it,
all day.
Love it. With
thank you, man. I appreciate the time, Josh.
Dude, this is so much fun, man. I appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us.
Thank you.
Definitely want everyone to check out Bunny Kitty, check out Web Paint, check out all of Persuade's artwork. And we'll be watching for what's next.
Good things.
Yo, that was Persuade on Rebel Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. You can hit us on Twitter at Rebel Radio Net. Facebook, same thing. Love to hear if you got some ideas for upcoming episodes, if you got questions, whatever else you got. Hey, there's music in this episode, courtesy of White House Music. We had tracks from Throwdown and KOH. Hope you enjoyed those. And most importantly, next week, come back for more Rebel Radio.